These are fun, off-the-cuff discussions on movies and streaming series, both new and old.
Together, we'll attempt to bridge the gap between Hollywood industry insider and the casual viewer.
This is Alec.
And I'm Ben.
And you're listening to the Cinema A to B podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cinema A to B, where Ben and I just kind of prattle on for about 30 minutes talking about whatever movie sparks our fancy. And today it's going to be Michael Mann's 2023 film Ferrari. So, Ben, you and I are, everyone should be aware, we are both huge fans of Michael Mann. So first question, does he still have it?
I don't know.
Okay. That's
it. I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that question based on this movie. Mm-hmm. At times it feels like he still very much does. And then there's other moments where it feels like his best days are in the rear view. I can't really tell. I did enjoy the movie, but it's got some serious problems. And it's funny because a lot of its issues are like very similar to complaints I had about Napoleon. And I find it weird that two of these directors that we both love have decided to go the route of doing movies on these historical figures that weren't particularly likable, that might have been enigmatic, and they both miss the mark. But for me, Ferrari doesn't miss the mark nearly as much as Napoleon did. I actually enjoyed this movie, and it got better, and the final act redeemed a lot of stuff that I kind of found problematic with it. But that's because I'm kind of a car guy, and I appreciate the Ferrari brand and story, even though I'll probably never own one. But yeah, I've got some gripes here with some casting stuff. The same deal as Napoleon. I don't think Driver was the right call here at all. And that's not a knock on Adam Driver. I think he's a very good actor, but I just feel like once Christian Bale, you know, left the project, it was just never going to be great.
Well, and they also had Hugh Jackman kind of slated to take over for a hot second as well. I mean, they even made it like an announcement for there was at least some rumor talk about it. I remember reading some articles.
Well, before I hand it off to you, there was the other name that jumped out at me that if they, you know, if Bale leaves, right, and I get that, I don't know exactly what he claims his reasonings were weight related, which didn't make a lot of sense because then he turned around and did Vice, because this movie's been stalled forever.
Yeah.
I think Javier Bardem would have been a good choice. And yeah, he's married to Penelope Cruz in real life. So you can have them play off each other as husband and wife. And I don't know, I just think the gravitas that Javier has is what this character needed. And Driver basically played the role like 10 to 15 years too early in his career, because I could still tell it was a younger man under heavy makeup.
Yep.
And it's not that the makeup was bad. I could just still tell that this was the younger guy on trying to play close to 60, I think.
Yeah. And he was like 38 at the time. No.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it is the movements, the way he would walk, the way he would, like, it has that apparent youthfulness to it, or the, hey, your joints don't hurt, or you don't have arthritis, you don't have other pain things, you have to be careful about your footing. It is the confident walk of, I am sure footed. I know my feet are going to go in front of me. They're going to step, you know, or whatever he's doing. It's just that confidence of knowing it's going to work, no problems. And that's definitely something much more of youth than of age. I mean, and like, I think he was 58, 59 at the time that this was supposed to happen. Of course, Driver's 38 at the time, I think, when they did this. I walked away kind of the same thing. So starting out, I was really enthralled with it. Like, just the opening kind of sequence of it being very, not a lot going on, a lot of just methodical shots that was very Michael Mann, kind of reminded me a little bit of Heat, of, you know, De Niro walking into the hospital and they're slowly getting into the car and then driving off, kind of like not a whole lot of dialogue, just letting the characters just find their space in the movie. And I really like that. I am also with you. I enjoyed this movie. I really did. I didn't love it. I do feel that Michael Mann has it much more so than Scott does. And then some other directors. I don't feel like, you know, he has it as much as like Spielberg does, as with like the Fablemans. Like, I still think Spielberg has got a little bit still of that magic left in him. I'm a little nervous about Heat 2. a lot after this of just, can he pull it off? I do think he's, my man is closer to Spielberg than he is to Scott in this regard with this movie. I was going into this with low expectations. I mean, it did terrible at the box office. I mean, it didn't even do half its budget. I think the budget was like 98 million or something, like just under 100 million. And it did like under $50 million at the box office. I mean, this thing did not do well. But he still held my attention throughout the entire 2 hours. It was a little long at parts, but the biggest problem I had was everybody trying to do Italian accents really badly. Like, you know, it just was rough. And yeah, I like Driver. I mean, and the fact that he's worked with so many amazing directors, I'm really jealous. Just, I mean, he's worked with absolutely amazing people and his career's just fantastic. But yet he put a fine performance, but it's not anything to write home about. I'm not excited about his performance. Also, he was super somber the entire time. And I remember Enzo like laughed and was smiling in almost every picture I've ever seen him in, you know, for the most part. Like it was, they made some weird choices in this film.
Yeah, they did. I guess some of my concerns with Driver were exaggerated or exacerbated by how good Penelope Cruz's performance mm-hmm. and is opposite him. She's really good. Outside of her, everybody just feels kind of plug and play.
Well, I would say some people like Shailene is just totally miscast. Like, you know, I mean, she's not on screen a ton, but it didn't make sense to me at all, that casting.
Like, no, I don't know. Yeah, I don't really understand that either. And especially given like how much of they actually shot in Italy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean,
some gorgeous shots of Italy. Just made
oh, it's beautiful.
I was like, yeah, I want to go back.
Yeah. This is one of those films that effectively works as a tourist piece for mm-hmm. for Italy. It's a beautiful country. Yeah. I want to go. It's been a long time. Yeah. I mean, when the movie's his bright red Ferrari rolling through the Italian countryside and you can listen to that mm-hmm. V8.
It's gorgeous.
That's a beautiful thing. And yeah. When the car's purring and those guys are pushing those machines to the very limit and beyond, the movie's fairly special in that regard. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really do anything with the cars that Ford versus Ferrari didn't do. No.
And that's going to be not the first time we compare it to that.
That's the problem.
watching that movie comparatively to this, I'm just like, that movie was so much better done, so much better thought out, so much better characters, dialogue, everything. Like, I'll take that movie in a heartbeat over this. And then this is Michael Mann.
I wonder if Bale left because he felt like the script just wasn't up to par.
That could be.
And then turns around and like, it's like, man, is Bale ever going to work with Michael Mann again? Because he turns around and spurns this and then does Ford versus Ferrari. Probably not. But he picked the better movie. I mean, he did absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just the characters in this, outside of Penelope Cruz, like the dynamic between Enzo and his wife is really interesting, done really, really well. Like you said, I mean, that's just some of the best acting right there is Penelope Cruz with that kind of wrestling. And I was reading an article that was talking about why she picked it. And she goes, film does very rarely allows there to be a place for a woman to be dealing with the loss of a child, you know, at least like the extended portion of it. Like, obviously we get a lot of it, loss of a child right at the beginning or whatever, but like a couple of years down the road, or like, how do they come to terms with it? And that's why she was interested in doing this project, is being able to take that on and mess with it. And that their whole dynamic of the two of them, that was what was driving me the most of continuing to watch and continue to be interested in what was going on. The cars at the end were great, but you didn't even have some of the same great racing shots as you did in Ford versus Ferrari. Like, I just felt it was like, kind of like you said, it was like more there for the ambiance of Italy and these red Ferraris and their engines being sounded, as opposed to really interested in the race. They didn't have the same kind of, they had some back and forth, but not to the same extent. So it felt much more like just a fast drive through the countryside in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Until it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Which I was not expecting at all, because I wasn't I wasn't dialed into the history surrounding that particular race. And that really caught me off guard. And I was like, whoa.
It was definitely foreshadowed, though. Like, yeah, when I was watching, they like cut to the family like beforehand. I was just like, well, something bad's going to happen. Which, by the way, absolute the worst CGI I've seen in years. Just terrible. Like they really
took away
really,
from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they took really away from the moment.
Yeah. He really needed to do like a Hitchcock or like, again, as Ford versus Ferrari, just have the explosion far off in the distance and don't even see it. You know, you just kind of, you know, something
or just bad the, yeah, or just the aftermath.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was utterly horrific.
Yeah.
But also suffered from rushed CGI.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not that one kind of pulled me out because I really took stock and went, oh, this is terrible. This is not good CGI. Someone was just checking boxes to let this get through.
I kind of had a hard time with it because I don't know the physics involved in a car like that and how airborne it actually would go. Mm-hmm. And even in the accident near at the very beginning of the movie, mm-hmm.
Where it launches into space almost.
Yeah. I'm not a really cynical guy when it comes to like on-screen violence where I'll like laugh at a bunch of stuff necessarily, but I kind of was just like, I think there was probably an audible, ha-ha,
yeah,
you know, and cause it did, it was like that, well, that doesn't look right.
I was like, physics, like, the car doesn't need to go work here. That
airborne to be a disastrous accident. Like it only needs to be off the ground a few feet and then it's lights out for the driver. So I don't, yeah. Minor gripe. I still enjoyed the film, but I'm not going to go back to it.
No, if I'm going to watch Michael Mann, there's 3, 4, 5 other movies that I'm going to see. I don't dislike it. I don't dislike it nearly as much as I did Napoleon. Like if I had to choose between watching this and Napoleon, then I would choose this in a heartbeat to watch again. And I wouldn't be upset about it. I know my buddy who's big into cars, Matt, you know, Matt.
Yeah.
He really enjoyed it too. And he's a huge Ferrari guy. So for, you know, there's a little bit of just love.
I would have expected him to enjoy it, although he's got a more discerning eye with some of that stuff too. So if there were details I didn't get right with some of the cars, he would have definitely been the first to spot it. So the back half I really enjoyed. And when the drivers are writing their letters and you start to realize the gravity of this, just it took a little bit. You know, you had the accident at the beginning of the movie, spoiler, but they definitely set the tone properly to remind you just how dangerous auto racing was in 1957. I mean, frankly, Formula One is, you know, this isn't Formula One, but that style of auto racing in Europe was dangerous for decades to come. I mean, and just horrific, absolutely, utterly horrific accidents. They just, and there's no safety components to these cars at all.
No,
I don't even think there's seat belts. So it was just, I don't know what you would compare these guys to from hundreds of years earlier. I have no idea what you would compare it to later on. And you could compare it to like a test pilot for the Air Force. Like that's kind of what it reminded me of was early in the movie, The Right Stuff,
which is just like
the reminder of like, yeah, how dangerous everything is. And even there's even the early stuff in, the movie First Man, it just reminds you how dangerous that is. So that's kind of the similarities because obviously now Formula One's extremely statistically a very safe sport, which is just hard to believe, but it took a long time to get there. Yeah.
So I was really confused at why they did it. Cause obviously this is kind of like not a biography, but just a little bit of a biopic of a very short span of time. But why they did the whole Ford, Fiat, Ferrari kind of interplay, because that wasn't until years. I mean, that wasn't until like a decade later, like literally Ford versus Ferrari talks about that, you know, about that same scenario. And so I was like, so which, like, did I misplace the timing of Ford versus Ferrari? Did it happen over a longer span of time?
Enzo planted the story, spoiler. He planted the story in the press that he was thinking about selling off part of the company to Ford.
But that was to the 60s, right? I mean, that wasn't 57.
No, he did it. I think he did it earlier. Unless they're doing timeline swaps, I believe he, but he only did that to mess with Fiat.
I mean, it could be
Ford versus Ferrari is just the Le Mans battle. It has nothing to do with Ford buying him.
No, at the beginning of Ford versus Ferrari.
But Lee Iacocca basically tells them to go F themselves, right?
Yes. Well, and that's when Fiat takes it on. So that was like 63. And then he was just like, well, we're going to beat him. And then 66.
Yeah, maybe the timeline got hurried.
And if he did, then maybe they're doing it for some additional effect of, I don't know, some more conflict and stuff. I just didn't feel like it needed it. I felt like it was kind of a, because they didn't really sit on it too much. Like it was like a couple moments of, hey, we're almost insolvent, which, by the way, didn't need to have the whole Ford or Fiat kind of buyout, just more worried about the insolvency. And then you've got him telling the reporter, put it in, that we're going to get bought out. And then the owner of Fiat giving him a call. And that's really it. You know, I mean, outside of some conversations between him and Penelope Cruz, it just felt like it didn't need it. Like, it felt like it was just added stuff that if this wasn't real, why put it in there? Like,
yeah, I mean, all I could find on that was, like you said, 63 Ford's in negotiations. They go there and he backs out at the last minute.
Yep. And that's when.
Yeah. So
I would have been much more interested if they kind of upped a little bit more of the Maserati Ferrari. Their fight, their rivalry, that would have been much more interesting.
At the end of the day, though, the snapshot's really not about who he was going to sell or not sell to. It was just really, I think all man wanted to convey was how on the brink the brand was.
Yeah. And he didn't need that. He could have, I mean, like, didn't need the Ford stuff. He could have easily had Enzo talk about it a little bit more. Or
although the scene with Penelope Cruz dealing with that is amazing near near the very end of the film.
Very end when hands in the envelopes and stuff.
Super cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got good moments. It's got good moments. In fact, the opening kind of blew my mind was as far as like where he is, mm-hmm. like where he's waking up. Cause mm-hmm. it lulled me in.
Yeah,
to me, like, thinking he was one place and he was not, he was in another. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I forgot how much of a, I forgot how much of a horn dog this guy was, by the way. They didn't even portray that part of him really.
No,
look, I mean, he was ridiculous, like crazed. So they were very nice to the character.
Cause they made him out to be like, he had a mistress, but you know,
she hints at it. His wife does, but they don't really ever show you on screen like the.
Well, when he was at the beginning, when we have the crazy car flying into outer space and the guy, you know, basically jetpacking out of it as fast as possible. When he talked about, hey, I don't want to see your girlfriend here anymore. I thought after he died, he was going to walk up. Like when he was starting to drive, he's going to walk over and make a move. I was waiting for that. Like again,
well, they wanted you to think that.
Yeah.
But then he told her,
yeah,
by the way, I knew your mother.
Yeah.
So like I knew your mother.
I knew your mother.
Yeah. It's funny.
So now man has,
by the way,
gone,
yes, we are kind of spoiling aspects of this movie. The unwritten rules becoming, if we don't absolutely adore a film, we probably are going to play spoiler on it. And if we really don't like it, we're totally just going to let it all out of the bag. So you're going to have to bear with us.
We're just going to tell you basically all the big points. So you don't have to watch
it. I'll put it in the notes though. We're always very transparent when we release these that, whether we revealed certain things or not. So,
and I will tell you, some of our listeners actually would prefer us just to do spoilers all the time.
I've heard not both. Care.
Yeah. So, but I digress. The other thing. So, I wanted to ask, so I know man switched to digital, filming or digital film in Collateral. Right. I mean, he's continued that, correct? He's not gone back to straight film.
He's never shot 100% on 35 ever again. There was a movie after Collateral. Well, some of Collateral was 35mm film.
Okay.
There were select scenes, but after that, it got to be less and less. And then eventually it was purely digital. And like I've said, mentioned before, when we discussed Heat, that I felt like he made the transition too early. before the cameras were really ready. Now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The movie's beautiful. It was red camera and some Sony Venice. Wow. And it was shot on Panavision glass, which is like some of the best glass lenses. When I say glass, I mean lenses, you know, some of the best lenses you can shoot on. And, they shot on the little red, Komodo, cause it's a little box camera, probably about that big, that you can put on cars everywhere and get a beautiful image.
Yeah.
So yeah, now it doesn't matter that he wants to shoot digital. I don't think it's lessening the experience.
No. And the DP, Eric Messerschmidt, I think was his name. He also appeared in a different episode of Cinema A to B because he was the DP for The Killer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah,
with Michael Fassbender.
Uh-huh.
Which
is a good looking movie.
It was. Yeah. No, he's done some good stuff. So,
which would have also been shot on Red cameras. Mm-hmm. Because Fincher's had a partnership with Red for probably a decade or more. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, a little aside, Nikon just bought Red.
What?
Like really? a month or two ago. Yeah.
That's
huge
crazy.
Acquisition.
Yeah.
Because Nikon didn't have a good cinema camera standing. Like, they didn't really make them. And so, yeah, they bought Red. So the question is, like, well, everything's going to get branded. I think they're going to just leave their cinema line branded Red, but you'll start to see certain features bleed down from Red cameras back into Nikon, Nikon mirrorless. So
yeah,
I think it's good for Red. I think it's good for Nikon. So it's, I wouldn't expect anything to really change. I mean, but
Red is doing quite well. So I'm surprised that they were able to afford
it. I had the chance to work on Red camera footage early on in my independent film career as a colorist, some stuff shot on the earlier Red cameras, and it honestly kind of took a lot of work to get it to look good. But the skin always looked weird, like plasticky almost. People's skin tones didn't look quite right. It took a lot of work to get it. That's not the case now. Now it's as good a camera as anything else. So all this stuff's, I definitely appreciate Tarantino and Christopher Nolan and Spielberg's stance on shooting film. I don't particularly have disagreements with it, but the more you're trying to stretch your budget as a filmmaker, that's probably the first place you should probably sacrifice is the decision to shoot.
Well, especially now it's not such
instead of film. And then you're talking about putting cameras on moving cars. I think it's a no brainer. So, Nolan would have strapped an IMAX camera to a Ferrari somehow, which would have been hysterical, would have been amazing probably, but that's not.
He would have forced them to do something spectacular.
He did it on a Spitfire. So he's like, Ferrari, this is easy.
Well, and they didn't have a black and white IMAX, and he made them make a black and white IMAX. So,
black and white film stock.
It's film stock, not the camera, obviously, but. So, fun fact. So, Sterling Moss, one of the drivers for Ferrari, I believe. So that was played by Ben Collins, was the second Stig on Top Gear.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. I love Top Gear.
I do too. That's why I told you.
I wish I had one of those introductions off the top of my head that they used to make for the Stig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is almost like, they were almost like the inverse of like a Chuck Norris joke.
Yes. Yeah.
The way they were phrased.
I thought you'd enjoy that. That's good.
Oh yeah. For listeners, we adore Top Gear. We adore the Grand Tour. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a motorhead. Like, I'm not a gearhead, but I do appreciate a good automobile.
So, did you watch the Clarkson's Farm?
Oh, Jeremy's thing.
Okay,
of course. I love that show.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Getting back to the movie, we've kind of tangented off a little bit. So I ended up buying this sight unseen. I didn't get to see it in the theater, so I got to watch it here at home. And I'm not upset about buying it. So, like, it was one of those things. I think, you know, I was going to probably buy it anyways because I'm a big Michael Mann fan, as you know. So I want his collection, but it's definitely not one good to add to the rotation of, hey, it's a man movie night, time to time to watch something. It's probably still going to be Heat.
And I have to say it was a very fun viewing experience late in the evening on the projector.
Oh, I bet.
Got the sound up as comfortable as I could get it without waking up my lovely wife and daughter, which is pretty easy to do down in the basement. So, but yeah, I got pretty close to a cinematic screening of it, and which helped for the car sequences. I think you need a bigger screen, and you've got a good, you 65?
Yeah. 65 inch. I mean, not 4K, but it was fine. Though I ended up watching this outdoors in my screen porch with a cigar. And a glass of wine. And it was cool. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience.
That's like smell-o-vision.
It was basically. as I'm sitting there, I started the movie, within the first 10 minutes, there's four glasses of wine poured, and I went, you know what I need? A glass of wine. And then went and pour myself one, and then came back and watched the rest of the movie. So it was definitely a fun experience. So I didn't watch it in the perfect setting, but it was definitely an enjoyable setting. So maybe it was one of those
helped me. You and I both know if I had a different space to do this podcast recording in, we would be pairing a movie for Cinema A to B with a cigar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Half the episode would be on the movie or the streaming show, and the other intermixed with whatever we were smoking. So and eventually I want to do an episode where I maybe get outside and
we'll do a live episode
where I'm outside and I can smoke a cigar.
Yeah.
I'm jonesing for a cigar right now. My goodness.
Wow. Okay. So we have gone way off the rails.
No, but that's okay. It's, yeah, I think you had the full experience.
Yeah.
It was good.
I am sad that it didn't do very well. I know I tried to get into it when it was in the theaters, but just either things came up or other stuff that I was getting other people interested in this was difficult. Like Laura really didn't want to go. Even my buddy Colin was like, I want to see it, but I want to see other things more. And so it always kind of kept getting pushed off. And so I was like, never got around to getting into the theater to see it, which I'm not kicking myself. I wish I did see it in the theater, but I feel that about most movies. I'd rather see it in the theater if I can.
So a couple of things working against it. One was it wasn't in that many theaters, and then it wasn't in those theaters for very long.
No, it was very short.
So it always had the odds against it to perform well. And it's an R-rated biopiece. So even the big award-winning films like that, like Capote, didn't have a big box office. It's not like people show up in droves to watch these movies. Also, this movie's not got a performance anything like Capote. No. I think it could have come closer with just an older actor. It just needed an older actor. I hate banging on that drum, but I don't understand why you would cast that young of an actor when he's not playing 40-year-old Enzo. It doesn't make sense to me.
I do think you hit that nail on the head. Bardem would have just crushed this.
He would have crushed it.
Yeah, absolutely, just been amazing.
And maybe asked him, and he was busy, or they didn't want to both be gone on a film. Mm-hmm.
That could be it too.
I don't know. Bring the kids to Italy.
Hey, let them drink wine, eat cheese.
Yeah. Hey, gosh, I want to shoot a movie in Italy.
Let's do it.
Who I don't know if I'd get the movie. I don't think I'd get the movie done. I wouldn't care. It would just be, do we have to work today?
Let's just go over there and take some shots of some of that force. Oh, it's a winery. Oh, perfect. You know what? Let's just break for 5 minutes. Let's go do some tasting.
Alex also serving as our scouting director, and for some reason, every location's a winery. What's going on here? Every scene is taking place in a different winery. What's going on?
I'm also craft services. I can make sure the wine's good enough for to be on camera. So
oh my goodness.
I wonder why my acting career didn't take off so well. Always drinking the wine. Anyways, I'm trying to think. Anything else on this was... It's sitting at about a 6.5 on IMDb. And
I think that's low.
Would you put it
worth
a 7?
I think it's worth a 7.
You think so?
Yeah. I'd give it a 6.9 or a 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can tell when a movie's like this is a 6.5 that people found it boring.
Yeah.
Like that's what results in a rating like that on IMDb. It's not really the quality of the film. It's them basically just saying I was bored.
Yeah.
So I don't know what people expect when they go into stuff like that. I guess more car work peppered in, because the car work's not peppered in like throughout. It's in big chunks. It's like in a big section in the beginning, and then there's not really much of any of it. And then obviously that big race, what is it? The Mille Miglia. Yeah. Which is great. That sequence is tremendous. And frankly, that might be what gets me to pop it back on, is I would end up just chapter jumping or in the movie and watching it again. Cause he did, you know, we've complained about some of the CGI, but he shot as much real car racing as he possibly could. And I could tell, and it looked dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it was.
Yeah.
To recreate it looked plenty dangerous with, I'm guessing those were, you know, fairly period accurate, kit cars. Mm-hmm. I don't think I doubt they were anything that was, there might've been a few real Ferraris in there, but I did
read an article that talked about how all of the vehicles that were in this movie were super period correct, and either mm-hmm. replicas or the actual thing. And actually driver couldn't drive pretty much any of them. His insurance wouldn't let him because of how expensive some of the cars were.
Really?
Now, fun fact, Patrick Dempsey actually is,
yes,
he's
raced Le Mans.
Yeah.
He basically like made enough money acting that he just was efficient with his money and just decided to race.
Yeah.
And he still shows up, obviously showed up in this, but he's showed up in other things throughout the years, but his acting career took a backseat because he just fell in love with road racing. He's a pretty good road racer too.
He is. And he has the best, you know, speech of dialogue in my opinion, or at least the line where he talks about wanting to have a cigarette or ashtray put in the car, because yes. he's like, have you flicked a cigarette doing 200 kilometers an hour? Or I forget exactly the speed. It's just like I need an ashtray.
I need an ashtray. Yeah. Any final thoughts on Ferrari?
No, just it was okay. Yeah, it was okay. It's definitely not Michael Mann's best. I don't think he's lost it as much as other directors, but I am slightly nervous about Heat 2, even more so than I was previously. So you, last thoughts?
No, I mean, if somebody's mildly interested in watching it, then I think they should pop it on.
Yeah.
Rent it or whatever for probably, I don't know, probably it's like $4 or $5 or maybe more. Because they didn't, when the box office didn't do well, the streaming rental price is adjusted accordingly. You'll see it's quite a bit higher. So I don't remember what it is.
It's $6 on Amazon right now.
See, and I think that's fine, because I think most people that might have mild interest in watching it are probably going to be good watching it once and not owning it. So yeah, no, check it out. If you're, you know, if you enjoy, Formula One and road racing and period autos. And I think it's a no brainer to watch it. There's enough in it in the back half to make it worth your while. So
yeah,
it should give it a look.
Do it.
Yep. Well, we appreciate everybody tuning in this week as we discussed Michael Mann's latest, and hopefully Heat 2 is kind of silences maybe the doubters. We'll see. I think it's going to depend heavily on casting. So again, thanks for listening in. We will be back next week with a brand new episode as per usual. And we hope you have a great week.
Thanks, everybody.